AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock.
A camel channel.
Hello, welcome to episode 18, season 12 of the Fighting God podcast. Today I'm joined on the world's angriest little man, Alex from Bristol. The angriest little man that closely resembles a wombat. That's you, Al.
Little,
what are you big? Are you a big man?
I'm taller than Rick. I'm not even the littlest person on this,
mate.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not even the littlest person on this stream.
Yeah, but you're the most triggered by the word little.
Yeah, I'm also the buffest and most sexually active. So, swings and roundabouts.
I had sex 3 days ago, so
don't count if you have.
That's meta, isn't it? That's a conversation that we had previously. Don't worry about whether I'm coming or not. Back in the school days, they used to call him the animal, didn't they, Rick?
That's true, they did.
Why did they call you that?
You remember that.
Vigorous fingering.
Because it's during my time in the rugby team growing up that I've just, every time... In rugby, they would give the ball, the opposition would give the ball to the biggest geezer and he would look for the smallest geezer and run straight at him, which was me.
Yeah.
He didn't know that I'd run full pelt at him and tackle him straight at his ankles
run
and he'd just go crumbling over. Yeah. So no fear, mate.
We had a lad at secondary school, so he used to have to play rugby and I hated it. Like, I was too good at football. I was captain. And I didn't want to do anything else. I shouldn't have been made to do any other sport. But there was a lad called Liam Coomer, right, who was an absolute man mountain, right? He used to get the ball at rugby and genuinely there'd be about six kids like hanging off his neck, like off his shoulders, and he'd still just be walking along like one of those giants in Game of Thrones, like people throwing shit at him with stones to try and make him fall over. Never did. I wonder what happened to him. Probably heart attack on the ball.
Good. Richie Toland comes straight in, double-footed, said, how many podcasts in a row you guys said fundamentally? Now, this is something that's been thrown at me a lot, that I say fundamentally a lot. I didn't realise you guys do. I don't know if you've heard anyone else say it, Rick. Have you noticed it?
No, it's not me, mate. That's not in my vocab, so...
I think it's...
Yeah,
I think it's me. I don't know what to say. I'm just trying to talk here. Do you know what I mean? How many podcasts we've done, how many times I have to speak through the week if I accidentally say the same word over again, which is a word that I use to fundamentally describe what I'm trying to say. then I'll fucking say it, Richie. Go and listen to another free podcast if you want. No, don't go away, though. We definitely need the listeners. Boys, it's been an exciting week, including the Bournemouth game. Two last-minute winners. The Bournemouth game is important for, obviously, what's going on in the league. We've got a couple of tough games going on coming up before the World Cup. But the Champions League game was something else. We previewed it on Five Statements on Patreon just after the game. And it talked a lot about why we're a second-half team and whether or not that's deliberate. I'm going to come on to that. But before we do, Rick, I know we have a laugh saying, Tottenham, why do they do it to us? And it's Tottenham. But I really want Tottenham to be a little bit less like Tottenham. Like, I've had enough of Tottenham, that Tottenham. I want to be able to relax through a game, because that wasn't relaxing, was it?
No, it's awful, man. It was such a horrendous watch. And even in the second half, when we got a foothold in the game and we had some chances, and just going close and just like kind of almost, you could feel that we were going to score. And even that was just stressful. And I was, for the whole game, I watched it standing up, as I always do. And I was just walking in circles, just round the rug in my front room, just walking in circles. And it was just unbearable, because the group, depending on who had scored, was just changing throughout, like through like minutes of the game, of who was going top, second, then we're in Europa, then we weren't, and then it was just so painful. And the build up to it was just it was tough, because obviously Stade Velodrome is known for its searing kind of atmosphere. And before the game, there was a video of the Marseille fans lining the streets for their team bus to come down, you know, akin to what you've seen at Liverpool, where they have all the flares, they all let off, and all the fireworks. And then the team bus is driving through, and it looks like hell. That's what it looks like. Just red fire everywhere, and noise and fireworks. And you know that kind of, if you're in that bus and you're going through, you know it's a big game. And it's a big game because I don't think they've got through to the last 16 in maybe like 10 or 11 years. And I think they were putting all their eggs in one basket for this game. And you just know it's going to be a red hot atmosphere. And previously, where we have seen Tottenham, like you were saying, just don't be that Tottenham. Don't wilt under that pressure. And after the first half,
it wasn't even like the wilting, Rick. It was the, like, not making it easy. That was what it was. That's what I'm trying to, like, I want us to get away from. It's like we just find a way of making every game the most difficult, even the Bournemouth game. And it was just like, I know it's what Spurs do, and it's what we've always do. They never make it easy for us, but I don't think I
just start on the front foot.
Just fucking make it easy for us. So let's go back to
the score straight away.
Yeah, just start scoring straight away in the first half. What are you doing? I mean, come on to it. Al, how did you process the game? Because you're one of the most emotional, when watching football, all of the people I've watched football with, and certainly in my close circle of friends, you're the most emotional.
I think I've mellowed now, because you know what? I came across that video. I don't know if OGs of the podcast will remember. It was a video of me watching when we beat Man City when we were on that title run, and Eriksen scored that winner, and I turned round and punched a pillow.
That's right.
Tuesday night was about as close as I've got to that for a long time. I mean, I love it, really. I mean, look, I don't love that first half, but... This is it. We've had that time. You know, they're talking about, just score early, just get on with it. We've had that. Remember 2016, we'd walk up White Hart Lane knowing that pretty much whoever we were going to play, we'd be probably 2-0 up, probably
bored.
Win
4-0. Most of us were bored, weren't we? It's like, we've 2-0 at half time again. Fuck's sake.
so we've had those times. And look, it's character building. And as much as, you know, the sporting and the whole VAR thing has put a little damper on things, and I do I am not as emotional about watching football now because I feel like, what's the point? Because in 30 seconds, I might not be.
Yeah.
When a game is like that, it still suspends that reality for a minute. I went mental when Højbjerg scored that. So, no, like I said, it was difficult. Everything that Rick said is right. But then if we took away that, we wouldn't have the moments like we had on Wednesday, and the moment that we should have had last week against Sporting, and the moment that we had against Bournemouth on Saturday.
It's crazy. Generally, the sort of cliche that gets thrown out a team is that they're scoring last minute goals. That shows a belief and a togetherness in the squad. But we've had three in a week. Like, we'd have the Kane goal, you know, either should or shouldn't have been stood. But, you know, before VAR, we would have got that goal. That would 90 plus 4 against, or 90 plus 2 against Brentford. And then that literally the last kick of the game against Marseille. It does show something. We shouldn't be in a situation where we're having to rely on these last gasp winners. And to be fair, the Marseille game, they had to win. They were pushing loads forward. We didn't need that goal to go through, but we did need that goal to go top and be seeded, for want of a better expression, in the last 16.
I think there's a mix of luck and progression, right? So some of these last minute goals have come from the fact that we are extremely fit.
Yeah.
The run from Højbjerg shows that. You know, we talked about, you know, them doing the sprints out in Korea, people falling over, being sick and stuff like that. That's essentially what Højbjerg did on Tuesday night. He did one of those sprints at the last minute when he's had enough, he's knackered, and goes and puts a finish like that. Set pieces is another area of growth, obviously, which I'm sure we'll get onto. But those, you tend to get more set pieces as you're pushing towards games, you know, pushing at games towards the end. And it's because we're so good at set pieces that we're then ending up scoring from them. And, you know, the slice of luck that we had, you know, against Bournemouth, maybe Ryan Sessegnon's goal was a slice of luck. Against Marseille, the communication from their bench was awful because they should have been told with about 10 minutes to go that a draw was enough to get them into Europa League, and they didn't have to go for that winner to be able to at least stay in Europe. And I think their captain came out afterwards and was quite critical of the fact that message didn't get across to the players. So there's always a balance of, there's always an element of luck. And like you say, we shouldn't be relying on that. But also, you should recognise the fact that there's two key areas that we have improved massively in, and that is fitness and set pieces.
Yeah,
and those two things have essentially won us those games.
Well, there's no greater eulogy to Gian Ventroni, is there? The fact that we scored three injury time goals in the last week. And you're right, the set pieces have been incredible. Like, we're so dangerous from set pieces. And can't remember the other guy. Can't remember his name.
Flav, where did you watch the game?
It was around your mum's house. She she made me a spaghetti bolognese and we watched the game together. Arm in arm. Well, we were cuddling the whole
way through. She's not got BT, so that's a lie.
Yeah, I bought it for her. Did a day pass. I watched it at home on my own. Which made it, I say that, right? I've got to get a shout out to my missus, because I didn't watch it alone. I watched it with her, and I often say that. I say I watch it alone because I'm into football and she's not, but she actually is into football, and we sat there together watching it, and it was actually really nice to actually experience it with her. She wasn't screaming cunt every 2 minutes like I was, but it was, she more than got what was going on, and really does, is starting to really get football. So I watched it with my missus, and I feel, I don't know how anyone else feels when they're watching football with other people who aren't emotionally invested as I am, or you are.
Do you feel self-conscious?
No, I could not give a shit because I'm so wrapped up. Like, that first half, I want to talk about my reaction to the first half, because I was a bit ashamed of myself. But no, when you're watching it, I'm so wrapped up in what's happening on the screen that I lose myself. And I've been on the floor. The front room, which is directly in front of me, my missus has been on the sofa with my daughter or stepdaughter. And I've been punching the floor in front of them. Punching the floor in front of them because of Tottenham. That's how much, I don't really care. I should. And I do afterwards wake up going, oh, fucking hell, I made a tit of myself again. But no, yeah, I've been caught punching the floor.
I just say, just before I forget, on Saturday, I was at a spa with a guest. So I had to watch it on a dodgy stream, led on like some sun lounger in some black and white Hawaiian print swimming shorts. And when the third goal went in, the stream froze. All I saw was Brian Hill just with his arms out like that. So I was pretty sure we scored, but not definite. So I'd flipped up onto my knees. So I'm holding the phone, like landscape, on my knees on the end of a sun lounger, leaning over the end of it, staring at this phone, waiting for this stream to come back. And then went mental, but couldn't do too much because, you know, you were a guest. So you haven't known for that long. So you're trying to, you know, remain cool. And also when I lean over, my belly looks a bit bigger. So I was trying to like breathe in at the same time.
When you say a guest, what are you talking about? Like you're the bird, just the girl you're seeing.
Lady guest, yeah.
A guest.
You could, them were there and they saw me. and they got a little glimpse into what it might be like.
Rick, do you feel self-conscious watching football at home?
I do a bit. Like when the girls were younger, I used to swear and mutter words in the crook of my arm so that it was muffled and they couldn't hear me. And now they're 9 and 11 and they've seen me like literally just putrid, rotten stuff just comes out of my mouth and I just can't help it. And my missus was saying, because the girls at the time of the goal, the girls were actually in bed. So it was like a muted celebration. It wasn't muted in the fact that it was muted the volume. But because I was trying to stifle it, it just went really high pitch. And I could hear my missus giggling in the kitchen of just, you fucking cunts. They've seen me at my worst. And
When we scored the Harry Kane goal, I was squealing. I was just going, yeah. And my missus, obviously, like I said, she's getting into it, but she doesn't react much when we score. She'll go, go on, yes, like that. I'm on my knees, like looking at the heavens with my arms up like this, screaming at the top of my lungs. And obviously that goal against Sporting got ruled off. But that goal that Højbjerg scored, just to do what he did and take the ball on, and that's not his game. Like I think, along with Bentancur being our best player this season. But but in terms of the kind of goals he scored and the important moments he scored in, I think Højbjerg pips Bentancur for player so far this season. And that goal, I mean, that was a peach. And bearing in mind, when this was 3 or 4 minutes after he'd literally looked like he'd absolutely broken his ankle. Like, I thought that was the kind of injury that rule Kane out for 10 weeks. And I don't know what they do. We know the type of men that they breed in Denmark. Apart from Mark Nesbitt, who's a small ginger man, generally in Denmark they build Vikings at shag monks. So like Højbjerg would have gone down a treat in the Viking Empire because he's turned his ankle. Most mortals would have, you know, rolled around and gone off the pitch and maybe a stretcher and oxygen and whatnot. He got up, he ran 50 yards, he beat the defender and just smashed it off the post in for us to, like I say, not go top of the group. It was, mate, wonderful. And there was a question actually here. We'll go to it straight away. I'm going to go to it. Just give me 2 seconds to find out who sent it in because it's a good question. Alok Badri, he says, do you think Højbjerg should get the captain's armband next season once Lloris departs? If Lloris does depart, if you had a choice between Kane and Højbjerg, who would you... And what would you do? Would you give it to Kane or would you give it to Højbjerg? Rick?
It's a difficult one. It's a good question, actually.
Yeah.
Kane is captain of England. He's been at the club since the beginning. He is kind of Mr. Tottenham in that sense. And I think naturally it probably would go to him, but Højbjerg is coming into that that leader of the team. You know, those kind of unofficial leaders that are leaders, do you know what I mean? And he could easily be made captain of Tottenham. But I think if it was a toss up between Kane and Højbjerg, I think Kane would naturally get it just because of England captaincy, how long he's been at the club, the records that he's got. And it's just an extra thing to keep Kane at Tottenham as well. So I think he'd probably get it.
It doesn't really matter, Alex, though, does it? If Højbjerg doesn't get it, he's still going to be a leader on the pitch.
Yeah, and I think that's the type of players that Conte wants. And it's always the type of players that you want in a squad anyway. You want, you know, a large percentage of that team to be of the same mental makeup that the other players are able to follow and take inspiration from. Some players, some players take inspiration from what they see in terms of actions and are led by inspiration in terms of performances on the pitch. Other players respond better to someone that will bollock them or is far more vocal. I don't think you go far wrong with either of them, to be honest.
No, indeed. We did finish top of the group, which is crucial because we can get one of the following teams in the last 16. We can get Bruges, who were top their group. No, they finished second, but they were very strong. We can get Inter Milan. We can get AC Milan, Leipzig, Dortmund, or obviously the team that no one wants, PSG. Out of those teams, what tickles your fancy, Rick? You've got Bruges, Frankfurt, AC Milan, Leipzig, Dortmund, or PSG?
I'd probably go for Bruges because I just think they would be the easiest to beat, really. And then second, I would go for Dortmund. Definitely do not want PSG.
Could you imagine Dier, Longley and Sanchez up against Messi, Neymar and Mbappe? Come on. It's not fair. They should only be allowed to play two of them.
It would be a spectacle to go to the lane and to watch those three players. But I do not want us to get drawn against them. I mean, the Milans as well. I mean, they would be a tough game. Although...
They didn't that tidy against Chelsea.
No, exactly. AC Milan won the league last year and then they got slumped by Chelsea. Mm. And then Inter are in a bit of turmoil financially, but I don't know what that means to... I don't know if it kind of translates to how they play at the moment, if players are looking, you know, one eye on the exit from there or you know, I haven't really been paying close attention to how they've been playing. But yeah, I'd definitely go for Bruges, number one.
What about you, Al?
I'm not as fussed about PSG, I think.
What do you mean? What does that mean, Alex?
Because...
What are you not fussed about?
Because I think we've played big teams at big moments before. You know,
we've never Madrid. Faced a front line like that.
Well, no, but I just think, you know, and who says it's going to be Longley, Sanchez and Dier?
All right, sorry. Give me three that will cope with those three then.
Romero.
All right, Romero, one. Dier? Davies? I think Davies?
I don't know. I just think I don't... I feel like we'd raise our game for these bigger teams. I think you go into a game like look, you know, look, if Bruges is on offer, then of course, yeah. What I'm not saying I want PSG more than anyone else. Well, what I'm saying is there isn't, you know, I don't really want Leipzig or Dortmund. I just feel like we don't tend to do particularly well. German teams, it just doesn't work for us.
Well, we did. We beat them in the run, didn't we, to the Champions League.
Yeah, and that was another team that were doing well at that time. But I don't know, it was just a gut feeling.
Do you know why I don't like Bruges? Because they've been very good in their group stages. They were underestimated. And I've been there before, or we've all been there before, when we got that really plum group, or what looked like a plum group, with Pochettino's, in 2017-18, when we were at Wembley, and Monaco had Mbappe, a player that we didn't really know much about then. And we got dumped out. I just think like maybe Bruges might be a surprise package.
But this is what I mean.
Who do you want?
I'd take Dortmund, Inter, or AC Milan. I think we'd beat all them.
I don't think it matters when you get to knockout.
I mean, it matters that we don't get PSG, but all the rest.
But do you think if we got PSG, do you think that I think there's far less danger of us going, okay, well, let's just see. You know, you can't be fucking about. You have to be like on it from go. And I just think players raise their game.
The focus will be there. That's probably what I'm getting at with Bruges, is perhaps the focus won't be there because they'd assume that we're going to get through over two legs. Whereas a better team, the focus will be there.
Yeah, I'd be if we get PSG, I'd be a bit like, oh, bloody hell, but also be actually quite buzzing for it.
I tell you what, though, lads, it's nice to be having this conversation, isn't it? Eh? Lovely. It's nice to be in the Champions League still. It's nice to finish top.
8 million quid for finishing top. Well,
what, 8 million extra pounds, is it?
8 million. Do you know you get I think it's 2.1 million quid just for winning a game in the Champions League.
Unreal.
And yeah, eight million.
So that was 10 million in our coffers just because of Højbjerg's goal. Daniel Levy probably never celebrated a goal much more than that. 10 million for nothing, doing nothing, just sitting
there. I'm sure Lucas's goal against Ajax probably hurt him a little bit more.
That's probably why he got a new contract. So it doesn't really matter. But I think there is something generally in that, you know, you get a big team, even in reputation, not necessarily what they're doing currently. And, AC Milan and Inter Milan might be having some issues, but they're still a good side. But the name comes before them. It precedes them. And the players will be well up for that. And White Hart Lane playing any of those big teams, especially an Italian team, I think. There's something about Inter Milan and AC Milan over Dortmund and Leipzig that will create a buzz at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You think of the nights obviously Inter Milan with Gareth Bale, which I think was this week, the anniversary of Bale's game against Inter Milan at home, you know, taxi from Icon.
Yeah.
You know, we had the night against AC Milan with Lennon and Crouch.
Yeah.
Obviously we've had games against, the game at Wembley against Dortmund and Harry Kane scoring the winner out there as well. So we've got history against those three, that up the atmosphere as well.
Not many people remember the return leg when we took them to White Hart Lane at AC Milan. I'm pretty sure this is right. Did we have the home leg first or the away leg?
Away leg, and then we nil-nil'd it, didn't we?
Yeah, and Gallas did like a bicycle kick off the line to stop them from scoring. But that night at White Hart Lane was as electric as the Inter Milan game. It was like there was a buzz about it, and that's what I'm saying. Like bringing either of those two to over two legs, I think we could do it. I really do.
And Jose Mourinho's Inter Milan, we beat, fairly convincingly after they'd just won the league.
Or left.
A slightly different team at
left.
That point.
No, he'd left.
Oh, he'd left. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, Rafa Benitez. But it's essentially the same team. It was,
after they'd won the league. Yeah. So we've, like I said, we've
not won the league. They won the treble.
Yeah. People think that, going into these big games. And I remember on Champions League, I remember when we drew Man City in the quarterfinals, and we were all like, well, that's that then.
Well, I was worried when Ajax were absolutely on flames, and in the Champions League when we got them in the semi-final, they in that first they beat us 1-0 at White Hart Lane, and they were very good. Yeah, very good. And very good in the first half, but just took us 45 minutes to turn it round. But when it gets to the group stages, you can build a narrative. You can create I did, and it has popped into my mind a couple of times in the last week, but I haven't vocalised it. I think thought about maybe, who knows, we might go on a bit of a run in the Champions League. Because if you think...
I was just going to say the parallels. Think of the group stage when we were coming out in 2019, the Barca game. There was pressure on the Dortmund game. We hadn't, it hadn't been a great group. Had to go to Barcelona and get a result.
Yeah,
how are Tottenham doing this? And then the obviously Man City with the VAR and Hugo saving a penalty, and then obviously the Ajax game. There are some parallels to it, and you've seen that with teams that have won the Champions League before, and they kind of just keep getting through to the next round some way or another.
Mm.
I generally think when it gets to this stage, it's anyone's game, really.
Yeah,
well, everyone.
We've obviously got injuries. Obviously, Son broke his eye. It could be 18 days before he returns to play. If you follow what happened to Kevin De Bruyne, 18 days would be perfect for Tottenham because it means he misses all of our games and goes to the World Cup with South Korea.
I'd love it if he missed the World Cup. That'd be fantastic.
I mean, there are from a Spurs fan's perspective, it would be perfect because he'd be completely rested and coming to the second. But I mean, you know how important he is to South Korea and how important, how much he wants to play there. So I'm sure he's absolutely gutted at the moment. Does any part of you think that a little run out of the game would benefit him, because he hasn't played well at all, apart from sort of a couple of, you know, halves in certain games
ever? Yeah, I genuinely think it would be massively beneficial to him to be able to have a month off. Mm. You know, it's, and I genuinely hope he misses it, because it means nothing to me, the World Cup in any form, and if it means that arguably, you know, the second most important or one of the most important players in our squad gets to have a month off of full rehabilitation and is, you know, chomping at the bit to be getting back, that benefits Tottenham. That's all I give a fuck about.
We've got
if it was Sonny, you can have a month off just watching Netflix, just eating what you want, just chilling at home, then that would probably do him good, from like burnout, kind of just whatever he needs to get capture his form back. But, you know, he's got a fractured eye socket. He's going to have an operation on his face. So, and when he gets back into playing football again, the first time he has to challenge and go up with a player and stuff like that, he's going to be like, it's going to take him a while to find his groove. So although I think the rest will do him good, it's going to be a lot longer road to recovery than I think we probably feel, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's
unfortunate. I don't think he's going to make the World Cup. Depends on the severity of the break, but the fact that he needs an operation isn't insignificant. Obviously, football's different from boxing. When you get an eye injury in boxing, we talked about on the five statements with Cal, who loves his boxing. You do our as well. You know what, it isn't an orbital break, apparently, so it's less severe, but it is a fracture and it would need support in his road.
He'll play with a mask on.
Yeah. But it's just about how quickly he can get back. But you're right, as a from a selfish point of view, a Spurs fans' point of view, which is really what we're all interested in, and Son's mental state as well. Like, I'm sure we want him to go and play for his country and do well and come back buzzing. But I think it'd be, in terms of Spurs hats on, it'll be better if Son...
Is it just... I mean, I don't know if it's just me, but I genuinely, like, there's a few of the important players. Like, if Harry Kane was to tweak a hamstring now, you know, that was just going to keep him out for a month, I'd be bang up for that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no chance I'd put country before a club, ever.
I mean, he would, but...
No, he would, obviously. He's got personal sort of achievements to, you know, do, but... Yeah, no, I'm with you, but probably not as enthusiastic.
Yeah.
We've got injuries to Son, as we mentioned, Richarlison and Romero. Kulusevski, we've got two league games against Liverpool and Leeds at home. Those are four massive. I mean, Richarlison less so, but Kulusevski, Romero and Son are huge. How do you think we set up in those two home games? We've obviously got to play Forest in the League Cup as well, but those players might not have played if they were fit. How do we set up, Rick?
I literally do not know. Like, looking at our bench.
But what are our options?
Against Marseille.
Our options are Lucas Moura and Brian Hill.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. I remember there was, I mean, for 1 minute, I do not suggest this, and I don't think it will happen, but I swear when Spence came on for the last few minutes, he played more of an attacking role where Kulusevski was playing. I can't remember what game it is that he came on, but he was a lot more forward. It wasn't like a traditional right wing back. He was a lot further forward. I don't for 1 minute think that Conte is going to do that, but...
He might do against Forest.
We've got tired legs in it. Yeah, and that it's... You know, 80th minute if we're a few goals up or whatever. But I mean, that a front three of Kane, Moura, and Hill. I don't know how well that's gonna do, really.
So what?
You know, Moura was fucking shit against Marseille. He was shit, man.
Yeah. What would
I
you
don't know whether that's down to mental fatigue. Because I mean, obviously, I think he's got a lot of pressure on him at the moment, because of, you know, his political leanings and the guy that he wanted to win didn't. And I think he would have probably got a lot of shit on social as well. I saw a lot of people whacking him. So I think that's probably been weighing on his mind, and he looked pretty tired against Marseille. Normally technically he isn't one of those players where you're like, his passing is spot on and stuff like that. He's more of a, you know, chaos player running at teams. But I just felt like it off the ball, he wasn't even pressing or chasing anyone. So he just kind of was just strolling about, which, you know, I don't know if he is in a bad place, but it was a particular bad game. So him Liverpool and Leeds.
We know that we have issues. We know Lucas Moura isn't the guy. We know that Brian Hill, you wouldn't start him with, but those are our options. So what do we do? If those are options, we know their limitations, but what do you do against Liverpool? How do you set up? Alex, how do you set up?
I don't see.
I was on this show and I was asked the exact same question. Like, did the exact same thing. I was like, I'm so glad I'm not Conte, because I think
you have to go free. I don't see any other way of doing it. I don't think you can play, you know, free across the top.
No, it's got to be a 3-5-2.
No, there's no Kulusevski, no Richarlison and no Son. I don't think that's an option. So I think you're going to have to go Kane and someone to play off him.
It's going to be Moura.
You know, whether that's Hill, Lucas, unfortunately. And you have to try and load that midfield. You have to try and get bodies into those positions and try and set up those attacks in a different way, rather than it being, trying to push on Højbjerg and Bentancur to try and interact with those front two. It might be a question of really having to rely on wing backs now, which is slightly worrying. But I don't see any other option. Emerson came on in the second half and actually did, you know, all right.
Do you know what? That hasn't been, not enough has been made about that. He did come on and play well, and he gets properly shit on when he plays bad, and for good reason, right? It's fine, like shit on him, but also give him some props if he's done well at the same time. I thought
he did okay.
Yeah, totally. He gave the team a lot more balance, and we were a lot more of a threat down the right-hand side when he was playing. And to begin with as well, like, was it Cesc that started on the right? I thought that was just quite a bizarre choice. I mean, I don't know how often Cesc has played on as right wing-back before. Maybe once during a game they've switched or something like that. But, you know, for the magnitude of the game against Marseille in that atmosphere and then putting Cesc as right wing back, I just thought it was a bit of a bizarre choice, really.
They switched it pretty quickly, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think that, like, for during the game, they kept switching. But, to reiterate, when Royal did come on, he did play well, so props to him.
Yeah, it's going to be a 3-5-2. I think the only way we can play in this instance, our strength flies.
I thought Bissouma came on and grew into the game. I thought he struggled initially, which is always going to happen when you're coming on into a game of that magnitude in that type of atmosphere very quickly. You know, that's not a planned substitution. You know, you've got to get with it quite quickly. Struggled to start with, but as the game went on, he got better and better. He is one of those players that the more he plays, the better he will get, because he needs to, you know, continue to learn the system and feel more comfortable in it. So that's good. I think it will benefit Bissouma long term, which I think will benefit us, you know, long term in terms of his development. The disappointing is that you'd like two up there, you know, and Lucas, as much as he was garbage against Marseille again. You know, how is he going to get into any rhythm anyway? And that's by playing, you know. And if it means that now he's going to have four games of having to play, then the best we can hope for is that it results in him getting into some type of rhythm and benefiting us in some kind of way.
And, you know, we need him now. We need him. We need him to play well. And, you know, this is a player that a lot of people wanted out the door, and I get it. But when you've got a player who's mentally on board, who's happy to be there and fight for his place and take opportunity when he gets it, it was quite important that he stayed at the football club, because if we'd had this terrible luck with injury and he'd had left, it would literally be Brian Hill as a secondary striker. It'd probably be a 4-5-1 with Brian Hill playing in midfield behind Kane, maybe. I know Lucas Moura isn't good enough for where we want to be, and I know praising him always comes with criticism, but he's there. We need him right now, and it's important, the fact that we have players that are willing to do everything they can in their limited ability to pull for the team when we have an injury crisis we have right now. Do you see Brian Hill involved, Rick, in these three games? Like, I don't think there's a world where he starts against Liverpool, but perhaps his Leeds, certainly against Forest, you'd expect him to play.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think we will see him start. Maybe against Forest.
Yeah.
But in the games against Liverpool and Leeds, I think we'll see more of him. I think he'll definitely come on, and I think he'll come on earlier than what he has been coming on for. But I think you're right. I think it will be Kane and Moura that will start, and then he'll will be the one to replace Moura.
Yeah.
When he comes on, and like 65 minutes or something like that. I'll be interested to see how to see some more minutes under him, to see what he can actually do. Because when he's come on, he has affected the game when he's come on. I can't remember the first time he got some minutes run out. Who was it against? Maybe against Frankfurt, where he was... he won the penalty, didn't he? He was quite erratic, but he was like chasing, harrying, and like he was everywhere, really. He really wanted to prove to Conte that...
Bournemouth as well.
He can do a job. Exactly. So he's coming on and he's showing willingness, which is great to see. But I'd just like to see him a little bit more calm and given that time to show what he can really do. So that'd be nice to see.
Yeah, indeed. Hopefully we'll see some more minutes of him. And you know, Conte's speaking about him. I know he's been interviewed. I don't know if you can hear that. There's like military helicopters flying over the house. Like Chinooks and Apaches, it's mad. Like living in the country, you look up and there's a fucking Apache helicopter doing exercises like fucking 100 feet over your house. It's mental. Fucking missiles and shit.
Clav discreetly taking out his hard drive and sliding it underneath a desk. The noises get closer.
Okay, we got him. Conte was talking about him as comparing him in his playing style to Bernardo Silva, which is high praise. He says he obviously needs to bulk up. I think we need to fill him full of steroids and get him in the gym. But there is a player there and everybody recognises it. And it's good that he stayed as well, because you remember the last day of the season, they were looking to I think he was either a loan or a sale, and he put on Instagram that he was quite unhappy about that move didn't happen. But you know, you see his reaction to that Bentancur goal where he wheeled away, and he's invested, massively invested, and player there, definitely a player there. Matthew Kavanagh, he says, would you go out of the Champions League in the next round if it guaranteed us a place in the FA Cup final, but no guarantee that we'd win it, Alex?
No.
I would. What, an FA Cup final like that? One game, as opposed to getting knocked out, at best, getting knocked out in the semi-finals by PSG or something.
Well, I don't know whether that's at best, but FA Cup, I feel like if we're looking at it in a broader sense, Spurs winning an FA Cup obviously would be great and I'd lose my shit and it would be amazing. It doesn't really do anything for us as a club, really, does it? Winning a League Cup or an FA Cup?
Yeah, an FA Cup.
Being in the Champions League with this January coming up, with the World Cup where it is.
We're in the Champions League. We've done it. We've done it. Anything now is a bonus. We've made loads of money. And even now, as a bonus, an FA Cup. So you, like, the people, like,
what would attract more players? The fact that the likelihood of you being still being in the Champions League or in an FA Cup final, better players in January, which we need.
We can. Oh, you mean to get Champions League to so that they're involved after?
Hmm.
I think we can attract players regardless now.
We can't attract the same players by winning an FA Cup.
Well, they're going to join Spurs for a two-leg tie in fucking in Feb.
In January, when this January transfer window is going to be like no other because of the World Cup. There will people be reacting quickly to the World Cup. There will be people reacting because of injuries at the World Cup. There is going to be an opportunity to sign some really quality players or players that even before we might not have had half a chance with, right? And being in the Champions League is going to be vital. If we'd have lost on Tuesday, I'd be genuinely worried about what we could bring in January compared to what we could bring in now. I'm not saying we would bring in rubbish players, but compared to the level of players that we could get now, it's night and day.
Okay, I think that we would be able to buy James Maddison still, and he would solve many problems in our 3-5-2.
I think so, if we were going to sign James Maddison, it would have happened by now. I'm not sure he's that fast.
But I'm just saying, like, to answer the question, that we would probably still be able to buy a player of his ilk that would solve problems, and I'd take the FA Cup final still. What would you do, Rick?
It's a tough one.
An FA Cup final?
I mean, look, we don't know who it's going to be. Maybe 10 years ago, I would have bitten your hand off for FA Cup final, like, just to... do you know what? In all the years of going to watch Spurs, Champions League, Europa League, League Cups, League, and all that, I've never seen Tottenham in an FA Cup final. Never.
There you go. There's your answer,
is something that I'm desperate to.
You've seen loads of good players join. Loads of good players join.
I think I've been to something like 5 or 6 FA Cup semi finals. Lost them all. Beautiful. Lost them all. Fucking hell, man.
It's an age thing. The FA Cup kind of passed. Like, I didn't grow up in a time where we all sat down on a Sunday to watch the FA Cup final, like, together as, like, you know, I was 3 or 4 when the...
It's back when fingering was normal, wasn't it?
Yeah. I got other things to do. I don't know. Maybe it just passes me by. If you'd have said Europa League final, I probably would have said yeah.
FA Cup Day used to be magical. It used to be so good. BBC, it'd just take over the whole day and they'd just be interviewing like kids and people from the town, that whoever's in the final, and they'd just be going through everything. It was just such a massive build-up to the day, but it just seems like it's lost a bit of its shine. But I just think there is just so much at stake with the Champions League, with player attraction, with money, and that prestige, and I like, there is nothing more of that. To win the European Cup is the ultimate. It is the ultimate. And if we can get into a position where we can get anywhere near a final again of that, then fucking, it's just too, it's the lure is just too much, man. I just want it so much.
But it'll be, what is it, six games. So you're basically banking on 6 games against the Europeans, Europe's best teams, or what a shootout in the FA Cup final. Bear in mind, the FA Cup isn't anywhere near as good as the Champions League, but the likelihood that we could win a FA Cup final against anyone in the Premier League, you know, we're in it. Whereas our chances to win a Champions League in this position are, you know, close to zero. You've got to take the FA Cup, in my opinion. Let us know. At us, at Love the Shirt.
Yeah.
Would you say FA Cup or this run or this position we put ourselves in for the Champions League? Final question. Well, the final there was another question from Reb, who her brain, you know, she sends in some mental stuff. This week's, but every single episode she'll send in a mental question. We don't always put them, but this is the one that she's sent in this week. Would you donate your missus's eyes, meaning she would be fully blind, if it meant the son had an instant recovery? Yeah, She'd never leave me. So, yeah. And we'd have some back. Archie Madden, he says, which player realistically do you should we sign in January? We're at top of our list. Rick, you love this geezer from, can't remember where he's from, but can you have a go at pronouncing his name?
So I think in the WhatsApp group, we got mixed up. There was a, I think it's from the Ukrainian guy from Atalanta.
That's right.
I think.
Yeah.
Milanovsky or something like that.
I don't even know, mate. You could tell anything.
I think he's 29. His contract's going, but just watching his YouTube, I think he could do a job for that that position we were talking about, where Madison can play and where this lad can play as well. And I think he's I think we can get him.
That little pig from,
again as well, Madison as well.
That little pig from Shakhtar looks good, didn't he?
Yeah. He does, yeah.
What's his name?
Mudrick. Yeah.
Mikhailo Mudrick. Yeah, that little pig. We should get him.
Pig in the mud.
Although I saw that, like, there was a report on F365 about players saying he's already joined Arsenal. But when you actually read the article, they're just using Arsenal as the name, and that they're saying he's already out the door. Arsenal bid £30 million for him. They want £86 million for this. He's not even 20 yet, this kid. But he looks good.
That's silly. No one's going to pay that.
Maybe we should. We're not a big club if we don't, do we? All right then, pigs.
I've got sorry, can I just I've got a question that I'd like to ask you both. What do you think about European teams letting off fireworks at the opposing team's hotel, like letting them off at 1:30 in the morning and then at 4:30 in the morning, I think it was.
Yeah.
Marseille fans for Tottenham.
Love it.
What's your opinion? Love it, or it's small club mentality, shit housing? Where do you stand on fireworks?
I mean, fireworks in general are shit.
Yeah, right. They are shit.
But yeah, I'm on board for that. I think that's great. I think if you've got the gumption to be getting up at 4:30 to go let off fireworks in an opposing team's hotel on the slight chance that it makes any difference at all, I value your pettiness. I value your commitment. You've got up and done something good. I love it. They did it against Ajax as well. And look what happened then. We keep slumping people in the last minute when they're keeping us up at night.
I think it's embarrassing.
I think
absolute geeks. Like, get a life. What are you doing? Like, you're getting up at 3.
What were you doing at 19, like 20, 21? I'm not saying you're going to let off fireworks, but you do some
stuff. I was
drinking
White Lightning in a park in Tottenham.
Yeah, exactly.
Having my way.
Yeah.
Not at 3 in the morning, but...
with your curtains.
No, but seriously, like, fucking get a life. Like, what are you doing? Like, if you go, like, oh, do you know what we'll do? You know, let's all get up at 2 a.m. and get some... You got any fireworks? I've got some fireworks. Oh, yeah. What we'll do is we'll find out. We'll take time out of our life to find out where the Spurs team are going to be sleeping, and we'll let fireworks over their building. Yeah. That sounds like... If that was your mate saying that's you, you'd be going, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, yeah,
Alex,
now...
Alex, no. At any time, your mate said, you would have done it.
100%. That
fucking dorks.
A younger dork. Age.
To use your expression, dorks.
No, it's not. It's not. Dorks are people like you that read like books and shit and watch Lord of the Rings.
They think
No, I'm finished yet. Like reading books, talking to us about like philosophy and like, oh, Jordan Peterson might have a point about a couple things. Like that's dorkish. Right? And then listening to Spooky rabbit on about, you know, Windows Vista or whether he's ready to upgrade. That's dorkish. Going out having a few beers and letting off some fireworks is fucking cool.
It's not cool, Alex. It's the
I'm gonna have to side with Team Alex on this one. I do like the pettiness and the shithousery, and I like as well the you know, where their coach is pulling in and all their fans had flares.
Oh,
and
come on! Get down the pub.
Their team know that important game, and creating atmosphere. And when you're watching
what
the
happened?
Game as well,
like, what happened? We battered it. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
they did get done, but like during the game, when you just hear like one of the a firework just exploded. It was a massive bang in the stadium. I can't remember who was commentating with Hoddle, but he was saying every time a firework went off, Hoddle was shitting himself.
I'm not surprised. Probably worried he was going to keel over. Do you remember when the Emirates was built and a load of Tottenham fans went and projected the Spurs badge onto the Emirates? Remember that?
Yeah, but that's different.
I like that.
That is good. That is good. All right, we'll have to agree to disagree. That's been the Fighting Cock podcast. Thanks very much for joining us once again. We're doing the preview for the Liverpool game. If you're still with us, if it's 30%, part of 30%, then we're doing a preview of the Liverpool game tomorrow. Until then, if you're not a patron, then we'll see you on Monday next week. Cheers, boys.
Cheers, boys.
Bye. Alex, good luck with your interview.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, go on. Tell us about it.
I just want to say, last week was not a very good week.
Network.